First, should say a few words regarding the Tirobhav disappearance of Srila Abhiram Thakur on the Dwadasa Gopal's 12th principal cowherd boy associates of Balaram and therefore of Nityananda Prabhu. He's told to be Sridham in Krishna Lila. And as Balaram is so powerful, he is also very powerful. One of his pastimes, take a tree trunk that would take 64 men to lift that tree trunk. He would play with that as a flute, hold it to his lips, twirl it, and so some sort of inconceivable strength he's showing as an intimate associate. Baladev, Nityananda, and in their pastimes, told when Nityananda Prabhu is visiting his place with his associates. This is their play, their leela, to discover. So Guru Maharaj compares it to the hide-and-seek game that children play. Although they know each other, they hide themselves from each other and then seek each other out. That sort of divine play. So the associates of Nityananda Prabhu, they're saying that, don't you know he's Balaram? And Abhiram Thakur, he's Balaram. For sure, yes, Nityananda is Balaram. As I in the song of Narottam Thakur, Rajendra Nandana Je Sachi Shuta Hoylo She Balaram Hoylo Nitai. Nitai is Balaram. And Abhiram Thakur is thinking of the Vrindavan Leela. And he knows next, talking about strength, speed also. No one can catch him, he's fastest. But Balaram can catch him in 2.5 steps. So he thinks to test this Nityananda. So he starts running, and Nityananda in 2.5 steps catches him, and he realizes, indeed, this is Balaram. And told also that he is in Grihastha Ashram. Possessed a whip named Jai Mangal, Vaikuntyar Prithivyari Sakala Chinmoy. In the spiritual world, everything is Chinmoy, spiritually conscious substance. The clothes, the earth, the ground, everything. We're so dislocated and misconceived as to think of this world, which we know even from science, scientists, it's temporary. No matter how long it remains, it's temporary, a temporary manifestation. Yet we think of it as the substantial plane, and from what we hear of the spiritual world, we think of it as something generally as abstract, imaginary, lacking substance. We have to reverse our thinking, understand the conscious world, it's the substantial plane, and not merely generic consciousness, but consciousness enriched, endowed with dedicating tendency. And in that realm, as everything here is composed of matter, one subtle or gross, there everything is comprised of spiritually enriched, dedicating, devotional consciousness. So his whip, as part of his paraphernalia, is also Krishna conscious. So sometimes he's taking that whip and whipping someone and whipping them into Krishna consciousness. They will feel Krishna preem from his whipping. We should be so fortunate. One such person was Srinivas Acharya. We're told in one instance that his wife, he's whipping some boy and giving him Krishna prema, and his wife saying, "Prabhu, I don't think he can withstand so much Krishna prema." But anyway, Srinivas Acharya came to see him. These associates of Balaram, we mean this in a delightful way. They're eccentric. The Jai Mangal whip and other things. And to test Srinivas Acharya, he points near and says, "Oh, look, be careful, look, there's a snake there." He said, "Oh, you're right, yeah, oh, I see, I'll be." He said, "Oh, no, it's a straw rope, it's not, oh, yes, you're right. No, it's a snake, oh, yes, I see, it's a snake." So this is it's not just merely a story, but it's demonstrating the principle. Objective experience, subjective experience. What we acquire at the lotus feet of Sri Guru, it may contradict what we see with our eyes, what we can verify externally. As long as we remain attached to that, then we won't get the full benefit of hearing the lotus feet of Sri Guru, what is descending into this plane. If that always has to be verified by our, you know, finite experience, our limited experience of the limited, or the capacity of our senses to observe and draw conclusions, then we'll be deprived of spiritual substance. Srila Guru Maharaj, he would tell this story of the Nawab, or we can say king, he puts an ad in the paper for a sycophant, means a flatterer, a yes man. And he's interviewing different people for the post and saying, "Do you think you'll be able to do this job?" And they're going, "Yes, without a doubt, I can do it." And they're dismissed. And you can say, "I think you won't be able to do it." "No, I will be able to do it, I guarantee you." Dismissed. Then finally, one man comes and he says, "Do you think you'll be able to do the job?" Says, "I think I'll be able to do it." And the king says, "You know, it can be difficult at times to agree with all the things I say. I don't think you'll be able to do that all the time." And the man says, "You're right. Actually, when I think about it, there would be instances where I wouldn't be able to agree with you." And the king, "No, but I think actually you could do it." And he goes, "When I think about it more, I think I also think I could do it." And the king said, "This is the man for the job." He has this sort of flexibility. What to speak of, we're dealing with the infinite. So everything will not come under the jurisdiction of our finite understanding or our finite means of verification or finite means of navigation. After one is through with that sort of modus operandi, Saraswati Thakur said, Tadvidi Prinipatena, Pariprajnena Sevaya, Upadekshani Te Jnanam, Jnaninas Tattva Darshina. Pranipat, bowing down, means submission to the lotus feet of Sri Guru on the basis that I'm finished with my own interpretation about experience of this world. Everyone has the pride of individual experience. Everyone, every last person has this pride of what they've seen, what they've observed, what they've learned in life. It's nothing. It won't help one approach the infinite. And in fact, if you add it all together, paroksha, right? Pratyaksha, paroksha, the sum total of the experience of the finite will not yield the infinite. So its primary means of revelation is through the lens of the eyes of his devotees. Premanjana Charita Bhakti Vilochanena Santak Sadeva Hridayushu Vilokayanti. Here, Brahma Sangita, and said, those eyes, what are they? They're opened, you know, with gyan, not in the ordinary sense. This premanjana, they're anointed with this divine love and affection. That allows them to have a proper view of Krishna. So, real jnana or knowledge in this sense is what is descending from that plane into this plane. And it may in fact apparently contradict what we see with our fleshy eyes. As in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna tells Arjuna, Dibya Chakshu, what I want to reveal to you cannot be seen with your fleshy eyes. But Dibya Chakshu, divine seeing, Chakshu Unmilitam Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha, divine way of seeing, that is what is Krishna culture. The world goes on spinning. Life and its circumstances and history and these things, we're not here to meddle with them or try to correct them or send them in another direction. It's what it is. The world of mortality always was, always has been, always will be. It's the nature of the mundane world. Ajnana om ajnana timrandasya jnananjana salakaya Chaksurun Militam Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. But Gurudev, with the, you can say, laser like precision, removing the cataractous eye of ignorance so that one can see properly Sambandha, Avideya, Prayojan. So, Aviram Thakur, with this classic test of Srinivas Acharya, and Srinivas Acharya passing with flying colors. Hare Krishna. Shala Aviram Thakur Tirobab Mahamahotavati Tigida. Any question?
Maharaj, you just mentioned about personal experience is nothing. Is it apply it only to sense experience, because we also can have realization that came from our guru, and this something.
No, when I said personal observations is what I mean. When I said that, I mean what we're able to observe of the world with our intelligence, mind, and senses. That's what I'm talking about. Not, to use the same word, the personal experience of what is comes to us by the grace of Sadhu Shastra, Guru, and Vaishnav. I'm not referring to that. It's about mundane experience.
Also, you mentioned about in spiritual world, everything is conscience.
Not just conscious, but Krishna conscious.
There is a question about it. In Loving Search of the Lost Servant, Srila Sridhar Maharaj says...
Loving Search for the Lost Servant.
Yeah. Whatever we think of is really part of our consciousness. And consciousness means person. Everything that we may be conscious of is a person. So it seems like even in mundane world, it's everything is a person.
In the background.
Can you explain this?
Yeah, Jamuna River. We see river. It doesn't mean there's not a river there. There's a river there. But in the background of that is the person. If the spiritual world is the origin of everything. We just said, Vaikunthiya Prithivyadi Sakala Chenmoy. Everything in the spiritual world is conscious, right? And personal. There's no such thing as consciousness without personality. So it's all conscious and personal. Right? The material world is a perverted reflection of that. So it means everything in the material world, if you can trace it back to its original position, is conscious and personal. So, Guru Maharaj gives an example, like the planets and the stars, Rahu, and the moon, we recently were speaking about the Ramayana, Ramachandra, addressing the ocean as a person. There's an ocean there, but in the background is the person. Then the ocean personified, that person comes forward at the behest of Ramachandra. Balaram, we're told, in a drunken stupor, calling Jamuna, and she is wanting to avoid him. And then Balaram, with his plow, he's dragging the Jamuna toward him. So we see the river, but there's a personality in the background. So Srila Guru Maharaj is making the point, the Vedic, the rishis who are adept and advanced in this sort of realization and culture, they're addressing everything as personal. Because they know ultimately, as Madhvacharya, Guru Maharaj references, when he says, there's a thing, the jiva or devata of that thing, then Guru Tattva, at the heart of the matter of Guru Tattva is Baladev, Nityananda, and in the heart of Baladev, Radha Govinda Chidlilamritam, in that way. So everything can be traced back in that position. And Guru Maharaj makes his point that actually it begins with Radha Krishna. Adi Rasa, Janmadyasya Yatonvayad Itiratas. The origin of everything, you say, it's Krishna, but Krishna is not alone. So we can understand the origin of everything, Radha and Krishna. The origin of all rasa, Madhura rasa. So the origin, Radha and Krishna, they're the origin of everything. It comes from them. Then who's Krishna, first, other, outcome? Balaram. From Balaram, everything else is coming. So if we, and to, you know, the quadruple expansions, the second quadruple, the Purusha avatars, the Guna avatars, the worlds coming from Mahavishnu, if we follow this sequence, it's all traceable back to this original spiritual substance, which is conscious and personal. So those who are advanced in this way of seeing, they're addressing the person that's behind the object. So when Guru Maharaj would explain this, he said, sometimes Yajnavar Maharaj, his brain, or we couldn't digest it. We become flustered and say, so you mean this table is the person? And Guru Maharaj would say, yes. And you go, So it's a particular way of seeing. Because why? This table, it's hard. It has breaths, breath, length, breath, width, dimension. Right? It's heavy, it's soft, it's hard, it's brown, it's this, it's that. All of these are descriptions. They're, what do you call it? What does Guru Maharaj call it? A cluster of subjective, forget the exact word, like concept, weight, length, breadth, dimensions, height, color, hard, soft. It's concept, a cluster. So he's saying a cluster of subjective concepts makes an object. So the basis of all of this is consciousness. And the basis of consciousness is personality. So they will address the sun, moon, river, everything in a personal way. The whip, the chariot, the sword, the sun, the moon. Those are the rishis. They're observers of reality. So if you can understand, at least in theory, how the original source of everything is personal, then everything that comes from there is personal. Krishna, it's only, how do you say, from this point of view, Guru Maharaj will say, there is no such thing as the mundane, actually. It's only that a part of the perfect appears to be imperfect for some time. And the details of that are described in the Bhagavatam about the Mahatattva and Prakriti and all these things. But suffice to say, in summary, and it has to do with Mayavad and other things, Krishna, in one sense, he's incapable of generating anything other than what is of the same nature as him. But this particular manifestation is a temporary manifestation. It's not its permanent character or characteristic. Because these are discussed in great detail in the books. This is not the forum to go into these discussions. And you can read in the Adi Leela of Chaitanya Charitamritam, later in the Madhya Leela, in many different places, about Mayavad. And one of their contentions is that if the absolute Brahma could actually be transformed into something, that would cancel its eternal spiritual quality. So it becomes a philosophical point. So as Guru Maharaj will say in the subjective evolution of consciousness, objective evolution, they're saying this, at some particular point of configuration and evolution, manifests consciousness. Rather, we should conceive in the other direction how consciousness can produce all of this. And that's discussed in the Bhagavatam and other places, and it's not so easy to comprehend. the glance of Mahavishnu towards the Prakriti, and so many things, and how the elements are manifest. There's a way that the temporary, material, mundane creation is manifest, and then it winds up again. So, you know, it's extraordinary, it's an extraordinary story, it's happened trillions of times, it's happening right now, it will continue to happen. But those who are spiritually advanced and realized, they know what the origin of all these things are. And they prefer to deal with that as to have their intelligence, mind, and consideration riveted to the most external aspect of the mundane. So it's a question of interpretation, just like our friend Nietzsche says, there are no facts, there are only interpretation. So if Abhiram Thakur says, it's a rope, Srinivasacharya is seeing a rope. He says, it's a snake, he's seeing a snake. So then we can understand, if nothing else, in principle, that whatever it is objectively is irrelevant to this type of thinking and cultivation. If you're going to enter that plane, to make progress towards entering that plane, then you have to follow spiritual thought and give up this the pride of objective observation. It's limiting and deceptive. So as the old joke goes, upon discovery, when the person says to the other man, are you going to believe me or your own eyes? So this is a case where we believe Sadhu, Shastra, Guru, and Vaishnav, not our own eyes. Why? Brahma, Pramada, Viparlipsha, Karna, Pattava. Because we're subjected to four defects. Comes from Jiva Goswami and elsewhere. And perhaps Baladev quoting you, but illusion, mistakes, cheating propensity, sensory inefficiency. And consideration of all those things means that knowledge acquired through the senses, mind, and intelligence is not reliable. And we're not talking about if you're making cement. Yes, if you're making cement, there, you know, there's a formula. How much of this and how much of that, and then the water, and then, you know, there's a way to do that. That's within the world. This is what people mistake. Within the world of time and space, within the world of measurement, yeah, you can make up stuff that is convenient for navigating the world of measurement. You can make up things that don't exist, like miles, kilometers, light years. They don't exist. There's no such thing as an inch or a foot, a yard or a mile or a kilometer. It's just everyone agreed to something for the sake of navigating the limited world. You shouldn't let that type of primitive, infantile sort of thinking guide us when it comes to try and understand the infinite. So Guru Maharaj says, and rightfully so, well, we can say conceding half to the man who said, if the finite can know the infinite, it's not infinite. Yeah, so Tak Sri Krishna Namadi Nabhavyed Graham Indriye. Cannot verify, this is what theists, so-called, they make the mistake all the time. They're trying to prove the existence of God. If you really understand anything about God, you'll know that that's not possible by conventional proof. So it's just acknowledging that you've been seduced by all of this nonsense. And now you're playing their game. So you're going to play the game with the scientists. It's rigged. That game is rigged. This is about the culture of faith. But they already convinced that you're playing their game means you were seduced by them into thinking that faith is not valuable, that faith cannot give you anything real. So Guru Maharaj's answer, if the infinite cannot make itself known to the finite, it's not infinite. That is the beginning point. That points to revelation. Well, you know, modern people can't accept that. That's their misfortune. Not going to try, if you try and convince them, oh, we have a NASA photograph. We did an experiment in the lab. And then someone else will show you another photograph, do another experiment. Then what will happen to your faith? If the reason you believe in something is because of a scientific experiment or a NASA photograph, you're in trouble. Amnaya prahatattvam. Amnaya means descending knowledge. Hridayena binugato yo dharmastha nibodhata. What resonates in the heart? In the heart, the deep core. And then you say, well, it could be wrong. Yes, that's true. And it could be right also. It's not just it's always wrong or only wrong. Could be. But also has the capacity for belief, for faith, the culture of faith. If someone denies the possibility of revealed truth, then nothing can help them. No amount of convincing or cleverness. Well, one scientist said this, another scientist said that. We're not interested in what they say, actually. We're interested in the statements of saints. What Jiva Goswami said, what Baladev said. That we're interested in. Not this scientist here said this, this scientist. Maybe for the sake of some kind of peripheral discussion, but there's no substance there. We sometimes quote people who are authorities in a particular field or something to act as a bridge to bring someone to Sadhu, Shastra, Guru, and Vaishnava. That can be done. But the substance or the basis of why we believe what we believe will never be that. They're unreliable. They're subjected to the same defects. Brahma, Pramada, Viparlipsha, Karana, Patava. This is about faith, culture, revealed truth, the infinite revealing itself to the finite. Not that the finite, by empiric method, discovers the infinite. Sometimes they do, if they're sincere, they'll say, oh, this could go on infinitely, this type of. Then they're on the outskirts. If they realize, yes, you can keep dividing and dividing and dividing and dividing. Anor anian mahato mahiyan, smaller than the smallest, and getting larger and larger and larger, greater than the greatest. But those are the extremes of the infinite. Brahma paramatma. Krishna conception, central conception of the infinite, all attractive, reality of the beautiful, love, charm, beauty, sweetness. These are not terms you will hear a scientist use. You cannot conceive of the absolute as being loving or affectionate. That would be laugh out loud, funny, dismissed as an impossibility. So it shows how remote and removed they are from the truth. The simple things that not only human beings, but even animals are capable of expressing in this world, they deny the original source of everything. That's just a lack of imagination, actually. In the name of being advanced, imaginative, you know, thinkers, this betrays a lack of imagination. Not so with the rishis. Drishi means they're seeing, observing. Observe, not creators, observers. But with what? Not this sort of external observation, internal observation. It's like it's here, the explorers, once they were navigating the oceans, discover new worlds. Now they navigate Akash, space, in search of new worlds. Right? It's like, what is the word? Centrifugal and centripetal. One current is sending everything out carrying current. Centripetal means everything's going towards the center. So one type of thought called everything is going outward. Spinning outward, just deeper and deeper into the mundane. The spiritual thing is centripetal, going inward toward to the central conception of the infinite, which is personal, conscious, loving, affectionate, and beautiful, Krishna conception. You don't have much time to play these games. Spiritual culture is serious. As much as anything requires some dedication. The swimmers, they get up at, 4 a.m. People working on a movie shoot, they get up at 4 a.m. Right? The Wall Street people, what is the money, what do they call it? Money never sleeps. Right? That's what they're saying. They're afraid to fall asleep. They might lose a dollar. Money never sleeps. So they can be like that. But about spiritual culture, then what? It should require a less dedication, equal or greater. So one point we have to acknowledge to what degree we're under the influence of erroneous thought. And this whole civilization, as Gurmukh said, it's a colossal hoax. It's built on a false premise. What Solzhenitsyn called the disastrous deviation of the Enlightenment to put man at the center and the measure of all things. And the only way we can, if we want to be generous, to accommodate them, say, Krishnara Jateka Kela Sarvatam Naralila Naravaputahara Sarup Gopavesh Venukar Navakishore Natavar Naralila Hoyanarup. The human like pastimes of Krishna. In that sense, as the Guru Maharaj quotes the Bengali poem, saying, man is higher than God. And the humanists are celebrating. What he means is the human-like pastimes of Krishna are superior to the Judeo-Christian concept of God. That's what it means, if you had to spell it out. That's why Saraswati Thakur preferred Godhead. Because God, as soon as you say God, this remote figure who's practically nondescript comes to mind and who's not, by most standards, the most pleasant personality. He wanted to avoid that, so he said Godhead. Srila Swami Rao is saying, Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, Lord of the land of love that's ruled by mercy over justice, a whole other world and worldview to consider other than what people in this world, they're always talking about justice and freedom of self-expression and justice. all based on a misconceived notion of self, mundane identity based upon gender, nationality, ethnicity, all external designations. The beginning of spiritual culture, ahang brahmasmi. And that's in the most general sense. It's not Vaishnavas who are fond of saying ahang brahmasmi. That's just Indian spiritual culture 101. You know, I'm spirit, I'm Brahma. In fact, it's favorite to the Mayavadis because they're saying that great Brahma that's pervading everything, I'm that. Yeah, I'm okay with that. No, you're Anu Brahma. Sun, ray, and sun. You know, same, same, but different. What's the difference? Sun has infinite magnitude. That's when you try and understand these things. So we see, if we're compared to the sun ray, and we see what we're like, hearing, seeing, tasting, touching, smelling, feeling, searching for relationship, love, affection, have all these particular tendencies, then if you took that to an infinite magnitude, then you'd have the direction of the infinite. We need to move with this sort of thinking. And as Guru Maharaj would say, it's not unscientific if you can think about it without prejudice or bias. And it requires ultimate imagination to surrender oneself. As Guru Maharaj said, if you take your tiny faith and cast it toward the infinite, he said, then prepare yourself for what will come in response to that. That's what spiritual culture is. Should we think life will only become meaningful when we find out certain information in the future after we're dead? Darn, we just missed it. They discovered everything in 2050. Ah. We're so stupid to believe this nonsense. We're always on the verge of discovering everything. But we probably won't be here when they do. I wonder if you can bet on that at Ladbrokes. There's no Irish here. It's a place where you can bet on anything. We on any level, anyone in connection with the Krishna consciousness movement perceives the value in terms of the spiritual substance that's coming to them. Not only those who we revere as being on the highest level. That's why Rupa Goswami says, Kleshagni Subhada Moksha Laguta Krit Sandra Ananda Visheshatma Sri Krishna Karshini Chasa. From the very beginning, you feel something. And someone could say, oh, maybe that's not real. Well, then there's a systematic way to approach this. And then if you're serious about it, follow this process, this approach, and see for yourself. When people say, Prabhupada says in the intro to the Isha Upanishad, people challenge and say, can you show me God? And his response was, do you have the eyes to see God? Like, Enakshidi is an artist. I once had to take an art class And I'm just taking it because you were told you have to take this. You know? I wish I could say it was because it was just because you had to.
It's okay.
Yeah. But I'm really happy I did. So I went there, and that teacher, she's showing us pictures of masterworks and explaining all this jargon about vanishing point and tertiary colors and, you know, color theory, all these different things that I'm feeling. Anyway, you're just sort of taking some notes and looking at all the pictures and listening to her and wondering, where is this going? Why am I doing this? But I forget how long into it was, but it was 3 weeks. At one day, it's as if all these pictures went 3D. And then all those things about vanishing point, tertiary colors, composition, started seeing them and realizing, oh, this is incredible. This is a masterwork. In the beginning, I thought, who says that? Look at this. I was in the Museum of Modern Art in New York, seeing people looking at certain paintings, and I thought I could understand what they were thinking. So I leaned over to this couple and just said to them, seriously, to see how they respond, I said, I think this is going to be incredible when he finishes it. And they're like, because they were thinking, like, this doesn't look like it's finished. At the Museum of Modern Art in London, the janitor threw away, swept up, threw in the garbage, $1 million exhibit. Why? Because from his point, it looked like junk, like garbage, rubbish. So he threw it out. And they come in, you know, where's the such and such exhibit? What? He thought it was rubbish. They paid millions of dollars to get this. So if you can understand that, then that's how you need to understand. So when atheistic people, they look at what is theistic and that it seems like nonsense. There's nothing there. It's just, it's primitive. It's tribal. It's not, you got to throw it out if you want to, you know, be modern. So it requires a different sort of seeing. So in the last few years, all these Sotheby's auctions, they're paying $100 million plus for certain paintings. Are those people stupid? They don't know anything. Everyone's just giggling because they're paying $100 million for something that, objectively speaking, is a piece of canvas with pigment on it, different colored pigment. So you say, what an idiot, right? It's worth $10 of canvas and pigment. And these fools, you know, the frame is worth more than that. And these fools paying $100 million, are they foolish? Or 10 years from now, 20 years from now, it will sell for $1 billion. Because its subjective value is increasing. Objectively, it's actually deteriorating and vanishing, while its subjective value is going up. Are they foolish? Or is there another type of seeing that they possess that allows them to recognize that the subjective worth of this translates into this much, objectively speaking? And that's just about art. That same principle we have to understand for spiritual culture. So we're happy with what we have. They say in English literature, with their own assessment, the great writers, and from a particular type of estimation, they say, the best of what has been thought and expressed. So I looked at that and I thought, oh, here's something that can be used. Here's something, you know, the boast of heraldry, the pomp of power, all that beauty, all that wealth e'er gave, awaits alike the inevitable hour, the paths of glory lead but to the grave. Gray's Elegy, it's about mortality, that's nice. Our sweetest songs are those that tell the saddest thought. Perhaps Shelley, or words, one of them. So he's finding here and there something that can act as a bridge to certain concepts of Gaudiya Vaishnavism. But generally speaking, looking at from the Western world, the best of what has been thought and expressed, when you extract that best, it usually ranks on the lower platform of Indian spiritual thinking, which means like Brahma, Brahmavad, that sort of thing. Only Guru Maharaj can carry it into the realm of Mahaprabhu and what these writers expressed, observing something here, he's sort of extending, blessing them with some sukriti by connecting that to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu or Radha Krishna pastimes. But the beginning point is the infinite making itself known to the finite. To accept that possibility, that prospect. One of the most famous atheists in the modern world had a friend who is also a self-declared atheist, and together they were atheistic brothers for so long. But his friend said to him once, but wouldn't you have to, although we're both atheists, he said, but wouldn't you have to admit, and when in consideration of the infinite, infinite possibility, infinite prospect, that it's not impossible. That much he could understand. But his friend said, no, I can't admit that. Because he knew also, if I admit that, then we're back to the original, we're dealing with God again. So he didn't want to allow that pinprick through which the infinite could come, you know, streaming in. And that's what Guru Maharaj said, the infinite making itself known to the finite. So it's hard for us to think all of this is the insubstantial thing and all this talk and thought is the real thing. We have to move under the influence of Sadhu Shastra Guru and Vaishnav, move in this direction. And that's why the importance of Sangsaresmin Kanadopi Satsanga Sevadirninam, most valuable treasure to be gained in this world, is the association with those saints who are fully developed in this type of substantial thought. Those are the rishis. Gyaninas Tattva Darshina. Tattva Darshina. They've seen the truth. Brahma Paramatma Bhagavan. Reality the beautiful. They've had a glimpse and more than a glimpse. And what they share with us, we faithfully hear that. The heart resonates and we become upgraded. We improve. Our ability to recognize these sort of things improves. Just as with the teacher, showing masterworks. Same thing. What do? We read the masterworks. We don't always understand. Chaitanya Charitamritam, Srimad Bhagavatam, they're the masterworks. She's showing masterworks, not nonsense things, but masterworks. And quoting the vocabulary, which we don't understand what all these things mean. But at a particular point, faithful hearing, Shraddhan Vato Anushranaya Dattabarna Yedyak, hearing and serving, then, you know, Shayameva Spurtida, some revelation comes to the heart. Not to the mind, not to the intellect, to the heart. And then the heart can influence the intellect, the mind, the senses. When it's under the influence of the spiritual current, then everything's going towards the center. Any other question?
Maharaja, can this method be also applied to mundane things? Like you will showing some piece of crap all the time and some...
Showing what?
Some crap, some rubbish.
Uh-huh.
All the time and you explaining some nonsense and some for some time you have some faith in it and then it like reveals to you and like this is...
Yeah, that's what Hitler's PR man said, Goebbels. If you tell a lie long enough and loud enough, people will start accepting it as the truth. There are many examples of that in the world. So, and it's Kali Yuga. So, so-called artists who are Shudras in Vedic culture, more or less just craftsmen, and they may be very good at that. It's a wonderful thing. But they were Shudras in Vedic culture. Now in the modern world, they're in the highest position. So, and things are degrading, deteriorating. So that's one of the symptoms of tamagun. That the lowest thing will be exalted to be the highest thing, and the inverse. And we see that in the present state of popular culture. Pranipatena means to make a break with those things. Wipe the slate clean, to break with that. And start giving one's attention to Sadhu, Shastra, Guru, and Vaishnav, being nourished by that. Otherwise, we'll succumb to the current of the world, which at best is just finite souls arrogantly sharing their observations, their limited observations about the limited. As if it is something of universal significance. Like, you know, a teenager on Facebook saying, you know, I rule. Do you? Really? You're the absolute. So many absolutes. So they're... But they it cannot be faulted because they're raised in a culture of humanistic sloganeering, telling you to believe in yourself, trust yourself, envision yourself. People, they're so, just like children, blurt out the truth without thinking or realizing the implications of it. So often they'll interview someone who's a so-called artist or whatever, and they say, what was your motive? Or when did you know you wanted to be like this? They'll say, I knew since the time I was a little girl, I wanted to be famous. And I saw that music or this or that was a way to that. But my whole life, I knew I wanted to be famous. They're saying that without, you would think someone would like, conceal that. Rather, they're saying, candidly. I wanted to be famous, and now I'm famous. I'm so happy. Then when someone realizes they're not absolute, they gain a few pounds, they don't look so good anymore, you know, then they start becoming miserable. Because they're not in their eternal form of Satchitananda. Especially, you know, for the women who was once a beautiful woman or the most beautiful woman, that type, supermodel, most beautiful woman, inevitably age will take its effect. So then they're no longer the most beautiful women in the world, just one of the most beautiful women in the world, or certainly a beautiful woman, or she's lovely. It starts going down. She's very attractive. She's a wonderful person. She has a great personality. And then how painful, I mean, we're laughing, but how painful that must be. So there are all these stories of famous Hollywood, and I'm just using the women because it's more prominent and more devastating for them. How as they got older, they had to either freeze their faces to keep it a particular way or just go into hiding. Try, and this is before social networking and smartphones and everything. They would just try to hide. Or they tell the TV people, no close-ups. If I go for some TV show, you can't do a close-up of my face. Because they know more than anyone else that it's taking effect. Remember, janma, mrityu, jara, vyadi. Old age is an equal in this sequence with the suffering or miseries of birth, death, disease. Old age is another type of suffering. So it cannot be maintained. Just think of Lenin in his mausoleum. So we're so superficially oriented that we resort to these, to technology, to try and save the situation. With anti-aging cream or cosmetic procedures or whatever it might be. But inevitably, can do that for some time. But by the time someone's like, you know, 90, it's pretty hard to conceal. Although my mother won't be happy to hear that. She's 96, going to be 97. Then at that stage, everyone says, the beauty is within. Certainly. So, but from another point of view, this hankering that we have, you can see how antithetical it is to the soul. And we can say, really, it's unnatural for the soul to be in a position of aging. The soul almost knows intuitively that it should be in this forever beautiful, wonderful position, internally and externally. And that cannot happen in this world. So that means it's in a foreign land. The spiritual world is not the foreign world. This is the foreign world. So many times when Srila Guru Maharaj is giving Harinam initiation, he would say, in explaining the 10 offenses, that Harinam, the holy name, has not come to take me to a foreign place when he's explaining the 10th offense. to remain attached to this world to such a degree that it obstructs one's spiritual progress. So he's saying, we should submit. The holy name is taking you to your home, not to a foreign place, a place that is unknown to you. And that world is characterized by Sat Chit Anandam, eternal, full cognizance, happiness, everything. That all the things that we're actually seeking and striving for. As who is it, Vidyapati, saying, you won't find water in the desert. That doesn't mean that water doesn't exist. Or if your only experience is the oasis, is the mirage. Right? In fact, in that context, the mirage, the illusion of something, is an indirect way of ascertaining its substance. Saying, but that this is not the world to find those things. It's in the internal world, in the conscious world, in the Krishna conscious world. And that's what everyone in connection with the Krishna consciousness movement is doing. They're engaged in this type of culture. While here, we're in this awkward position of navigating the mundane, embodied and all that. But we have, by the grace of our Guru Varga, this opportunity to engage in this sort of culture that and ride the waves of that in-caring centripetal force going towards the central conception of the infinite. Krishna, reality, the beautiful. Hare Krishna.